Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to thank and pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Room by Room, the Home Organization Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We're champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Gabriella Yastra, coming to you from NAM, Melbourne, Australia. Let's begin. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, we're talking about from setup to solutions, growing basics, overcoming challenges, and maximizing success. And we're going to be talking to Meredith Shepherd, who is the founder and president of Love & Carrots, which is a sustainable gardening business. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gabriella. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about this today. Do you mind talking about yourself in a bit more detail before we get started on our topic today?
Sure. So I grew up in Vermont, which is a state in the United States. It's in the northeast, and it's very wooded and rural. So I grew up on a large farm, kind of gardening with my family. And I started my career in Washington, D.C. after going to college. And I was really interested in urban agriculture and growing food. So I started working on some farms. I had worked in landscaping, in the summers between college. And I kind of put those two things together to come up with the idea of Love & Carrots. And I started Love & Carrots in 2011. So that's, 12 or 13 years ago now, which has really flown by. And not at all.
Mm-hmm. And so can you tell me more about Love & Carrots and what you do there?
Love & Carrots is a urban farming and edible landscaping company. We design, install, and maintain edible gardens and urban farms in the DC area and the surrounding DMV. We also have a maintenance program where we maintain those vegetable gardens. In addition to that, we have a coaching program, so we can come to your garden every 2 weeks throughout the season, which is March to November here, and not only tend your garden, but also teach you how to do it. We work with schools, nonprofits, businesses, corporations, the whole gamut. We typically install about 100 to 150 gardens a year, and we maintain about the same number on a two-week rotation.
Wow. It's funny because I've obviously heard of landscaping companies, but I never thought of them. I always thought of them as quite ornamental, you know, people who just want a nice front yard, maybe with some hedges, and not like a productive garden. I guess because I thought that if you were doing this, you'd want to, if you want to eat the vegetables, you want to grow the vegetables. So I guess it's kind of like halfway between like a supermarket and like your own garden.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, there's, a lot of time and resources goes into a landscape, even if it's just grass and hedges. You've got to like plant them and water them and fertilize them and maintain them and weed. So you might as well have that look really nice, but also give back to you. So I think it's kind of a popular and growing movement over here anyway. Back when I started, I really didn't do any marketing or anything like that. I just kind of put out a couple flyers, and since then I've really been just doing my best to keep up. So, I think it's cool.
That's great. I love it. Ornamental gardens are beautiful, but I do really love the, edible gardens or edible and decorative gardens. I mean, what could be better? But before we get into this in a bit more detail, we're going to do a section we call Have You Met Meredith, where we get to know you through some of your favorite things. So the first thing I'd like to know is, what is your favorite book?
Oh my gosh, my favorite book. My favorite book is The Glass Castle by Jeanette Winterson. It's an autobiography that is about just a really rough upbringing that, overcoming hardship and that sort of thing. that really appeals to me. And she's written a lot of other, I like all of her books.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you mind telling me a bit more about it? Who is she? What are some of the hardships that she's overcome?
So she is, she's a writer now, and she used to work for, I think she was also a writer for the New York Times. She ended up getting a job doing that. But the book is about her upbringing, and her father was kind of this kind of crazy genius, crazy person, lots of crazy in there. And her mother was also crazy, but an artist. And she basically grew up as a nomad with her siblings, kind of all over the United States with no money. You know, her father was also an alcoholic and always had a lot of harebrained plans and kind of just wild ideas about how to make money and how the world should work. So they, one of the first scenes is she's 2 years old in a trailer and boiling her own hot dogs, which if you think about a two-year-old boiling her own hot dogs, her parents just kind of let them run wild and really didn't parent at all. They raised each other. And so it's about that, how she and her brothers just basically survive. It's a survival story and, you know, what they're eating, how they're protecting each other. And it's called The Glass Castle because her father always talks about how one day they're going to build a glass castle up on a mountainside. And it's going to, you know, have all of these amazing functions where the sunlight, you know, it's glass. It's also a greenhouse. They're going to grow all their own food and have elevators and all these amazing things. And, you know, when she's really little and her siblings are really little, it all seems so magical, like the way that their life is. They sleep under the stars. But then as they get older, they start to realize that, you know, they should really, you know, go see doctors and be educated and things like that. So that's kind of the gist of it. I definitely recommend it. It's a pretty quick read. It's short. I just also read her most recent book. It's called Half Broke Horses. It's about her grandmother's upbringing. So that was also interesting as well.
Okay. So we've got the whole family history there. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Watched any movies recently that you've enjoyed?
Movies. I am not a big, if you are going to ask me my favorite movie or when I haven't watched many recently. I have two toddlers in addition to running my business, and some other, you know, projects going on. So I don't have a lot of time for TV mm-hmm. or movies, but I would love to have you. I would love a suggestion. Sometimes that's what happens. I sit down and I'm like, I'm going to watch a movie and then I can't think of one.
Oh dear, a suggestion from me. I've never been asked that before and I haven't got anything prepared.
That's okay.
My favorite movie is, it's a Japanese zombie movie called One Shot of the Dead. It's not scary. And it's basically like they have, they're shooting a zombie film and then it turns into a real zombie film.
That's cool.
I always have to preface it by saying I can't tell you any more than that because it's really great, but I don't want to spoil anything. It's kind of hard to find on the internet, so good luck.
Okay. I just thought of a movie that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes, you that was that great. Yeah.
That was good. That's the most recent movie I saw.
Okay. And that came out last year? The year before?
Maybe. I haven't seen Barbie or Oppenheim or whatever yet. Those are the two ones that I'm hearing about now, but
mm-hmm.
maybe I'll find time.
I think Everything Everywhere All at Once was a really great film. So, you know, great recommendation.
Yeah, it'll keep you going for a while.
Yep. And do you have the time to watch any or to listen to any podcasts?
I listen to The Daily. Mm-hmm. Usually when I'm driving to work, I used to listen to Pod Save America. I liked, I listened to Books on Tape. I just listened to Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. Mm-hmm. Just finished it. So that's really kind of a book, but it was hard to read and listen to. I kind of toggled back and forth between them.
So what was that about?
That was about a boy raised in Appalachia in the United States, which is a kind of a rural mountainous area in like West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So it's very southern-ish. And he was raised in the foster system and just kind of had a brutal upbringing, and then got addicted to, well, I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot of drug problems in that region of the country, a lot of poverty, hardship. Again, I don't know. it was definitely a page turner and good to listen to, but it was difficult to listen to. It's a lot of hardship.
Mm, okay, so a good recommendation, but maybe space it with something lighter.
Yeah. yes, in small doses, and then watch some comedy.
Yep. Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about gardening and, you know, how to grow our basics, how to overcome challenges. But first of all, I like to set up our topic with some definitions. So how do you define home organization?
How do I define home organization? Home organization is what you do to keep yourself sane when you have too much to do, and keep track of things when you have too much to do and too much on your plate. It's about like, you know, I always put my keys and my phone in this basket so that when I'm rushing out the door, I know where they are.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so making sure you know where everything is in your home so that your home runs smoother.
Yes. Also, I like little habits, like, you know, I have a water filter in my house and you have to pour the water in the top. And so before I put something underneath to turn it on and fill it up, I put a pitcher in the water, turn that on first, then fill up my thing, then dump. And then you don't have to spend, you know, 10 minutes filling it up all at once. Little things like that. Yes. I follow the Marie Kondo way of folding your clothes. So, you know, you get everything's like stacked vertically so you can kind of see everything. Mm-hmm. With two toddlers in my house, we deal with a lot of laundry, so that helps.
I find that method's really great if you have like specific things that you want to wear, so you know exactly where they are rather than having to dig through.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And you know, home, you know, I think that also less is more. We're always trying to get rid of stuff in this house so that we have less to organize.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Speaking, you know, having done this podcast for a while now, I think the main things are everyone has too much stuff. We need to get rid of stuff so we can actually be organized.
Yes. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And what is garden organization? Is that different from, you know, home organization, or is it sort of same principles just in a different area?
I think that garden organization is pretty different. I think that it requires a lot of planning. Gardening is all about timing. In order to get the most out of a planted space, a certain area, you have to time the crops, right? So there's certain crops, you know, germinate quickly, mature quickly, and are harvested. They're in and out in, you know, 40 days, something like that. Other ones take a long time, and some even over winter. So timing and planning, it's good to map things out. But then also be flexible and, you know, realize, oh, there's, you know, my kale came out early. There's a little space right here. So I'm just going to throw in a quick crop of radishes while there's still time, things like that. Whereas, you know, a home, you're not really drawing at things out, I don't think, and mapping things. And maybe, you know, you're making lists, to-do lists. That's something that's similar. But, you know, I think that garden planning is maybe more of a science. And just planning ahead. There's a lot of planning ahead.
So it's kind of, I guess, yeah, planning ahead, knowing what you want to plant, and then making sure that when the time comes around, you have everything ready.
Yeah. You know, having your transplants ready, making sure you know how much to plant of one thing so you don't have too much or too little, so you have a meaningful harvest. That's what we call that. You know, and then there's also like, there's soil temperature requirements for germination for different things. So that, you know, none of it's really complicated, but there's a lot of little things to know. And when you put it all together, you can get a vegetable garden that's productive and also beautiful. If you get really good at it, you can say, you know what, I'm going to sow my lettuce in diagonal rows and have different colors. And, you know, sow these flowers at the same time so that, you know, when the tomatoes are ugly, the cosmos are blooming right in them.
Oh, that's great. But I guess that would take a while to get to know your garden and what works and what doesn't.
Yes. Yes. You know, I think that there's no way around just experience. I think that you know, the more seasons you have under your belt, the more you've experienced each type of different crop, the more you've experimented with different things and learned what you like and what you don't like, and the more mistakes you've made and realize that, you know what, I can't push that planting date, or maybe you can, things like that. So mm-hmm. I think there's no way around experience when you're gardening, just season after season.
Okay. So, but I'm guessing that, you know, when you're starting off, okay, so for example, me, I don't have a garden. I did have a little planter box where I planted some snow peas. I planted them at the end of winter, which I discovered was not the best time to plant them.
Yes.
I think my harvest was 6 peas.
Oh, well, you know, snow peas, they should go in the end of winter, like very, very late winter. So early spring. So mm-hmm. I don't think you might not have been that far off. The first thing, the most important part is sunlight. Did you have enough sunlight? Did you have like enough soil in the box?
I'm not sure.
Water it.
I did water it.
Yeah.
I think the sunlight might have been a problem because it was sort of in my apartment complex on a railing. So it was the sunlight shield was shielded by the building.
Okay.
So I think it was low sunlight.
So that, you know, that's, I would say, number one most common mistake in beginner gardening is trying to grow in less than 6 hours of sun. There are things mm-hmm. that you can do that you can get away with, but you have to make sure, you know, that you're growing the right crops in really low light conditions. Also, if you're in apartments, you know, often when I see people in doing container gardening, if the container's too small, that can be a really big problem. You know, I say like a 5-gallon bucket, you know, a typical just like a hardware store bucket that everybody thinks about when they think bucket. It's about, you know, 2 feet tall and about a foot diameter. That's a good size for most crops, but only one of something big. So it's like one tomato, one cucumber plant, one pepper plant, maybe 2 pepper plants, but you could maybe have like 5 or 6 pea shoots in a bucket like that. I always think it's funny when people have like a little, you know, like a little milk carton or something, and they're trying to grow a pumpkin out of it. You know, because the plant above the soil has to have a corresponding amount of roots below the soil, and you have to mm-hmm. have enough space for all of that down there.
Okay.
So,
And with sunlight, does it have to be direct sunlight? Can it be like the area that I was growing, it had some sunlight. It wasn't dark, but it also didn't have direct sunlight.
So it does have to be direct sunlight. So if it's, you know, filtered through a tree or something like that, then that definitely reduces the amount of light that's coming through. It can't just be light out. You know, it has to be like receiving direct sunlight. So I have a tool that I take around to all of my gardens before we start them to assess the property. And it's called a solar pathfinder, and I set it down and I can see when the sun comes from behind, you know, a building or a tree or whatever, and then when it's going to set on the other side. And so the hours of direct sunlight is what's important, and you want at least 6.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's one of the things that you're looking for when you're setting up a garden is how much sunlight you get, and you want at least 6 hours of sunlight.
At least 6 hours. And that is the first thing that I look. You can do a lot of corrective action for the other things. You know, you've got to have sunlight, soil, and watering, right? 3 basics for plant life before you get into timing and soil temperature and all that stuff. But sunlight is the only one you can't really correct. If you don't have it, you're kind of just limited by what crops you can grow. But if your soil is poor, you know, you can build a raised bed, you can bring in compost, you can amend. You know, watering, you can add irrigation or find solutions with that, but not sun. We like Loving Carrots works in a city, and obviously, you know, growing in a backyard is very different from in a farm field. So a lot of what we've learned to do over the years is, you know, help people maximize their production, even if they have 5 hours of sunlight, or, you know, six is not considered full sun. 8 hours is full sun or more. If you think about a farm field, that's like 12 hours or something. The sun comes up at 6 a.m. and goes down at 6 p.m., right? So even 6 to 8 hours is less than most crops will want.
Okay, so the first thing you want to do when you're setting up your garden is figure out where all the sun is. And I'm guessing that if you've got a spot in the backyard where it gets the most sun, that's where you want to set up the garden.
Yes, put it there. Even if it's in the front yard, put it in the front yard.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you start looking at the soil quality and improving soil quality, you know, improving watering after that. Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, so you'd also design like a sort of garden setup. I like to, you know, raised beds make things really simple and easy for people. It's very clear message, like don't step here, step on the outside. It also creates like a nice loose soil volume. And so once you find that spot, then you've got to design like a little bit of a raised bed setup. You know, how are you orienting them? How wide are they? How long are they? What are the paths made out of? And a lot of that's just aesthetic decisions. But one mistake that I see a lot of people make is they make the beds too wide. So you don't want to walk, if you're doing a raised bed, you don't want to walk in it. So if you have a, you know, 5 by 5 foot square, it's really difficult to reach the center, right? So I like to keep our raised beds around 3 or 4 feet wide. Mm-hmm. I like 3 a lot because, you know, if you're thinning carrots, which is really time consuming down the middle of a row, then it can, you know, it can kind of hurt your back after a while. So I think 3 feet wide is really good. And you also want to think about how big the garden should be. What are you trying to grow? How many people are you growing for? Is it just kind of like an experiment for you and your kids, or are you trying to feed your neighbors? You know, so once you find that sunny spot, there's some more decisions to make before plopping a raised bed down.
Okay. So, I mean, do you have any rules of thumbs, you know, say, you know, for example, you know, me and my partner, there's two of us, it's more of an experiment. How big should the, you know, how big should the garden bed be?
Good question. Well, I am a grow your own vegetable enthusiast, so I'm always pushing people to go bigger. In my experience, people are, you know, sometimes hesitant to have, you know, more than one bed maybe. You know, 3 by 8 or 3 by 9 is kind of a standard size, I'd say. And in that you can fit, you know, a tomato plant, maybe a couple pepper plants, and then some greens or something like that. Like, you know, 2 to 4 crops at one time. There's more turnover with the seasonality of things in this region anyway. But if you can fit it, I think even one person can really put to use at least three raised beds that are 3 by 8 or 3 by 9. And that also, if you're trying to grow organically, it helps you you're better set up for a crop rotation, which is a really important part of organic growing, because you don't want to grow the same plant year after year in the same soil. It can lead to buildup of pests and diseases. They can pull out the same kind of nutrients every year and cause all kinds of problems. So 3 beds is a nice crop list. It's not overwhelming. And if you plan properly, then you're not going to have too much of one crop, right? You know, you're going to fill it all up with head lettuce, and then you've got, you know, 85 head lettuces. you're going to have a nice selection of different kinds of crops.
Okay.
Also, you can always like rest one for a year and just plant flowers to pick.
So you, yeah. So you've mentioned like planting different things in the beds, and like, how do you decide what should go in and how much of everything should go in? Because, I mean, we get this little packet of seeds. My thought would just be to chuck everything in one bed and just see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that, and you'd probably have a nice garden, and you'd probably get a lot out of it. It's, you know, it's about, like, do you want to take it up to the next level? Do you want to do the research? And, or, you know, if you, I think that year one, maybe that's what you should do. And if you really like it, then keep doing it. And year over year, you'll get more organized. You'll get more excited about, you know, planting the right amount of different things. You know, every, we just have a chart that we send to people or that we use that we refer to that says how many row feet of cilantro or whatever it is makes sense for like 1 to 2 people or 2 to 4 people. It also depends on your garden goals. You know, are you trying to make tomato sauce? Is that your, and like canned tomatoes? Is that, that like tomatoes are the belle of the ball always in the garden, right? It's everyone's favorite crop. So, you know, if you're a tomato sauce or a pickler, maybe you want a ton of cucumbers. You're gonna plan your garden according to your own goals and your own likes and dislikes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people, like when they put together their crop list or the, just even their shopping list, you know, the types of vegetables that you buy in the store, typically it, you know, it can get pretty long and you can easily fill up 2 to 3 raised beds.
Okay. But I'm guessing that, you know, the rate that everything grows is slightly different. So if I was to plant, I don't know, some pumpkin and some carrots and some cucumbers all in one go, I'm going to get them at different times. So how do I plan that out so that, yes, I don't know, I'm not waiting, yes, ages?
So you definitely, okay. Our, like our central kind of, you know, force of the garden, the thing that determines all the rotation and everything are tomatoes. And I think that's pretty typical. And the reason is there's a lot of people love them. Also, there's a lot of, tomato pests and diseases that are, just really prolific around here. Tomato blight, early blight, late blight, and, a lot of other things. So it's really important to rotate your tomatoes. So typically I put the tomatoes in whatever bed I'm going to, and then that's like the first thing to decide. And from there, you can kind of build out what is going to be planted around the tomatoes based on companion planting. Some plants can work together for various reasons. Some plants are, you know, work together because they repel a common pest or they attract a common pest. But tomatoes, I like to plant with basil and with marigolds. They have beneficial impacts on each other. Then the second bed is, I'll usually group together the brassica family. So if you want anything that's in the family of, you know, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, collard greens, also called the cruciferous family, those have a lot of common pests. So those we want to put all in one bed together so that we can cover them with a row cover, and that because all their pests are flying insects. It's white flies and cabbage moths and harlequin beetles. They've just got tons and tons of insect pests. So I like to group those together in one bed to be able to cover them all up, and just with a screen or like a, it's called a remesh or reme, excuse me, agricultural row fabric, and that protects them. Mm-hmm. And then the third bed is kind of like a, if you want to grow some squash, some things in the squash family, like cucumbers or pumpkins or zucchini or melons, those I would put in the last bed. And then you've got a spare. If you have four, you have a spare. Those are kind of the major organizational groups that kind of determine like what will go where. And then the rest of the crops, there's still, you know, hundreds of different types of vegetables that you can grow that are left. And those can kind of all like fit in around that. Okay. So like, you know, like root crops, carrots and beets and turnips and parsnips and all of those. And there's different reasons to place those in different areas. And this is all stuff that you just kind of can learn with time, or you can do all your reading at once in a book. But carrots work really well along the sides of tomatoes because around the time when they don't take up a lot of space, and usually your 3-foot bed is, there's like just kind of a narrow gap on the side. It's just an example that if you seed carrots there, they are ready to come out at about the same time that you need to force the tomatoes to ripen their fruit. And a way to do that is to kind of chop up the roots a little bit, make them lose a little bit of root volume, and that'll kind of stress out the plant. And when a plant gets stressed, they go to seed really quickly. So they ripen up their fruit. So when you're harvesting your carrots, you're putting a digging fork in and kind of chopping things up a little bit, and you're kind of achieving that as well with the tomato. So there's, you know, there's a lot of different reasons to plant different things around each of those main groups, but that's how I like to start. And those are also all quite long season crops, tomatoes, brassicas, and cucurbits. So even before those are even in the bed, you have a whole, in this region anyway, you have a whole spring season of cool weather crops that are short-lived. So like spinach, salad greens, mustard greens, mostly greens. So to kind of like maximize the season and get more out of the space that you have, you can start early, fill up a bed with those things, and then even plant your tomatoes right in the salad green bed. And then by the time your tomatoes or your kale or your cucurbits have leafed out and shaded kind of the whole bed area, your short-lived cool weather crops, your lettuces, it's time for them to come out. So they're done.
Okay.
So that's kind of like the timing thing I talked about in the very beginning. It's all about timing and these little relationships, right? Between little crops. And it's kind of like slow motion fireworks, you know, like the way that a garden kind of changes with time. And yeah.
That's amazing. So what are some other sort of seasonal things that you need to think about, you know, every year, you know, as the weather changes?
I think, you know, the number one thing about weather changing is, you know, just timing of seeding and timing of crops. The frost dates, your last frost date in the spring and the first frost date in the fall are really important, because some crops can tolerate a frost, some can tolerate a light frost, some can tolerate a deep frost, and then some not any frost at all. So you've got to have those, you know, frost-free crops planted at the right time, so that they'll finish out before the frost comes. There's also, you know, every pest has its own life cycle, and every, you know, insect pest or disease. So with, you know, the tactic with organic growing is really about preventative measures. A lot of it is about preventative measures. So you, at a certain point, you want to start kind of, you know, pruning your tomatoes to make sure that the airflow is working well. You can spray them with like a organic antifungal sprays to prevent the blight from coming. You can, like I said before, you can cover your brassicas in anticipation of, you know, different insects coming at different times. So once you've got kind of like, you know, your spring crops are in and kind of on their way out, your summer crops are in, then the pest season really starts. And it's, you know, so your summer months are really about kind of managing and preventing those pests from taking over, and identifying the problem, identifying the right spray or the right, you know, preventative measure to handle them. Mm. And then it's about kind of winding things down and forcing things to produce, deciding when it's time to give up on a tomato plant. You know, even if it's got one little tomato that you're waiting for it to ripen, it might be just time to get it out so that you can get your fall crops in and have a whole other season to extend. So I would say the other major timing thing in conclusion is really about like pest management.
And you've also mentioned like fall crops. So what are fall crops? And I'm guessing you put them in fall and you know, harvest them in winter.
Well, you actually put them in late summer, and then they're ready to harvest in the fall. So, fall season kind of mirrors the spring season. It's a lot of salad greens and alliums, so like leeks and onions and things like that, spring onions. So there are short-lived cool weather crops. And, you know, they can be a little bit trickier to get established, because you want to get them you want to get them into the garden in late summer. So it depends on the type of crop, but generally, you know, like end of August through, or end of July, actually, through August, and then maybe to the beginning of September, mid-September, is your fall planting season. But these are cool weather crops, remember, so the temperatures are probably still in the high 90s, and it might be difficult to kind of get them to germinate, or you have to really keep them watered. But you want to plant them towards the end of the summer so that by the fall, they're at like a harvestable size or a certain size. And then some of these fall crops can even overwinter, and you can eat them all winter. And then in the spring, they're still going and they have another life, in this region anyway, because we have pretty mild winters. So that's fall crops.
Okay. It's very complex. There's a lot of different moving parts that are going on, but the most important thing is just to experiment and to try things out.
Yeah. Yeah. I think don't be afraid to try things, and don't be afraid to give up on things too. I think that, removal is a bit, I don't want to say death, but like killing certain plants is a big part of gardening too. And you can really miss out on a lot if you can't bring yourself to, you know, rip out a tomato plant that's just not going to do anything, or that is got a disease and is going to infect the rest of things, or you don't want to give up on your summer crops because even though they're so pesty. You've also got to be kind of like fierce and bold and not be afraid. Always know that next year is another round. You'll have another chance. And there's another season coming after spring. There's summer planting and then fall planting too. So be bold, experiment. Yeah. And thinning.
Mm-hmm.
Thinning is making sure that, you know, after you seed, you always seed more actual seeds than you'll get adult plants. Just kind of like a little insurance policy, right? You seed five, but you're going to, you know, maybe only three germinate, and then you really only want one. So you have to pull two out. And if you skip that part, then you can really reduce your harvest, you know, especially with certain things like carrots. If plants are too close together, they will not get as big as they need to be. And that's another like common beginner mistake that I see people get overexcited. And when they have these little baby plants, even if they're not starting with seeds, if they're starting with transplants, you know, you put the four broccoli plants in the bed and it seems so empty, you know. But you've got to trust the label on the package that you need. You need the certain spacing because, you know, jamming in more than the recommended amount is not going to mean that you have, you know, twice the amount of broccoli. It's just going to mean that they're going to produce less because they're competing with each other. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So twice as much work, but fewer crops.
No, the opposite of that.
Oh.
Okay.
So less work and more crops?
Yes. Less work, more crops, fewer plants. Mature spacing.
Yes.
Yeah. Jam five in one bucket, you won't get more than. Yeah.
And what are some other mistakes you see people make often?
I think those are the two main, I guess, there's three main ones. We talked about one in the beginning of this set, and that was the sunlight, not checking their sunlight. Most common garden problem is just not having enough sunlight. I'd say the second is, overplanting, like I said, so not, you know, crowding things together, and then also hanging on to things, not wanting to pull them out and plant the next round. I think I see, also just kind of mixing up perennials and annuals. There are some, some gardeners really swear by intermixing perennials and annuals. I think that's fine, but if you're growing in a raised bed, if you're planting a perennial, so a perennial is a plant that comes back year after year. Maybe I should clarify that. Mm-hmm. So like in this climate, a lot of herbs are perennials. So oregano, rosemary, thyme, sage. Those, you plant them once and they come, you know, they die back a little bit in the winter and then they keep coming back. So if you plant those in a raised bed, however, the soil is going to settle just because, you know, the plants are pulling material out of the soil, airspace collapses, you know, worms are eating it, for whatever reasons. You always lose several inches every year. And if you have a perennial in there, then you can't top up the soil without uprooting it or and destroying some of its roots or kind of burying it. So the way I like to garden is keeping annuals in the raised beds. Annuals are crops that have a 1 year annual life cycle. So seed to production in 1 year and then it's done and you have to start again the next year. So I like to separate annuals and perennials into different, at least different beds. If not, I like to keep perennials in the ground, not in raised beds, because I don't find it works very well to have them in there.
Interesting.
I'll see a lot of, like, you know, blueberry bushes in a raised bed or raspberries in a raised bed. And if they're mature and healthy, by the time they get there, the raised bed is really just like a frame. It's just like a ring around it, and they're growing at the soil level. So
they're just doing their own thing.
Yeah, they're just doing their own things, and the borers are just sitting there not really like contributing at all. So mm-hmm. you might as well, you know, it takes a lot of materials and time and effort to build a raised bed. You should use it for the crops that need it.
So you've mentioned some mistakes that people make. So with this low sunlight. Now, I'm going to be moving into a place where I've got one very small garden bed. It's not really a garden bed. It's just sort of a built-in pot in the apartment. And there's no sunlight because I'm actually surrounded by other apartment blocks. So there's not very much sunlight. If I wanted to grow a very, very small garden there, how would I get around this situation?
Well, I think you're not on a block. The most common, you know, suboptimal conditions for gardening in an urban environment are low light and low space or small spaces. So you've hit both of those. And luckily for you and for everyone, the answer to both of those problems are growing crops that have what's called a continual harvest as opposed to a non-continual harvest. And I'll give you some examples. A carrot is not a continual harvest plant because you plant one seed and it grows one carrot and you wait about 90 days and then you pick out the carrot and then it's over. Whereas a basil plant or a tomato plant, for example, are continual harvests. So you have the plant, you have the one seed, it grows one plant, and each plant provides a lot of, like, multiple harvests. You can keep picking basil off the basil plant, you can keep picking tomatoes. So that solves your space, your small space problem, is always grow crops that have a continual harvest. The same is true with shady gardens, because plants are going to grow much more slowly in those environments. They don't have, if you think about, you know, 8 hours a day as optimal, you know, food for a plant to grow, because they use the sun for energy. Having less than 8 hours, so I don't know if you're down around 4 or 5, just means they're going to grow more slowly. They're also going to grow differently. They're going to stretch to reach the sun. They're going to put a lot more energy into making big plants, tall stems, because they're trying to, you know, grow tall and reach above whatever's shading them from above. So for shady gardens, you want to focus on continual harvest, but also plants that you're only eating the leaf of. So salad greens and herbs are the key there, because the plant doesn't have to spend all that energy to create a huge plant and then a flower and then get the flower pollinated and then make a big tomato and then, you know, produce all those sugars to ripen the tomato. So less fruiting crops in shady gardens, and also continual harvest because everything's growing more slowly.
Okay, so things like lettuces, kale.
Lettuces, Chinese kale, vegetables. Mustard beans, chives. Also, all the herbs. Well, not just about. So basil is a great one for low light, champion. And oregano, thyme, chives, mint. Mint's a good one. And, you know, you don't need that much of those at once. And for that reason, you can, if you like hot peppers are a good one, because especially small ones. If you really want to grow a fruiting crop, so that's, you know, anything like tomatoes or cucumbers or eggplant, go for a variety that has small fruit, so like a cherry tomato as opposed to a beefsteak, or like a baby eggplant as opposed to a Nadine, which is the big the big ones. Also, cucumbers are kind of a weird exception to this rule. They produce pretty well in pretty low light. My backyard has like 4 to 5 hours, unfortunately. I've got a big tree that keeps just growing and growing in the neighbor's yard. And I grow all the cucumbers that I need and basil and, you know, various other things. So,
okay. And the bonus is you get really cute little vegetables.
Yes. There is a type of gardener that is a baby vegetable gardener, and they want everything to be baby. They say, oh, can I grow a baby eggplant? And how about a baby cucumber? And they just gravitate to those things. Yeah.
I think that's going to become me. I'm going to become a baby vegetable person.
Well, perfect, because you have the great, you have the perfect yard for it, the perfect garden.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much. We're going to move on to our practices and habits section. So what's something that you do in your own garden to manage your garden?
I barely manage my garden because I'm very busy. So
of course.
I grow things that I know that I don't have to spend a lot of time on. I also, you know, any time that I have to garden, I have a 4-year-old and a 3-year-old, and they really want to help me. So I have to pick things that are not that easily damaged. And that also kind of reduces the time that I have. So I grow, right now I'm looking at it, I have beans, cucumbers, cherry tomatoes that I get very few of little by little, but it's worth it. And cilantro, that's kind of my, it's kind of my crop list. And all of those can kind of take a beating and don't require a ton of attention. Bush good. Beans. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, good. So if you have kids and or you need a garden that takes a beating, right there, that's your list.
Yeah. And also if you don't have enough sun, yeah. I mean, it's like the shoemaker's children, right? I garden for a living, but I don't spend much time on my garden at all. Mm. But it's still worth it. Oh, shishito peppers. I don't know if those are popular over there, but man.
I don't know what those are.
And it's a type of pepper. It's about this big, and they're kind of wrinkly and green. And about one out of every 10 is kind of spicy, but they're really good blistered. So just like sauteed really quickly on high heat. And then I make a dipping sauce out of Greek yogurt and or sour cream and soy sauce. And it's like my favorite snack. But shishito peppers themselves, they grow so, they're just so prolific on one little plant, even in the shade. So
I love that. Full.
Yeah.
Because I don't like spicy things. So
yeah, good. Well, sounds shishito great. Peppers, it's kind of like Russian roulette, you know, 1 out of 10 is got a little bit of kick. So if you're trying to train yourself to like spice, it's maybe a useful one. You can cool perfect. It down with the sauce.
Great. Thank you. Not only do you provide gardening advice, you also provide cooking advice.
Just that one.
Just that one.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much. If people want to find out more about you and about Love and Carrots, where can they find you?
Our website is www.loveandcarrots.com. That's LOVEANDC. Oops. I start over. Can I start that over?
Yep, that's fine.
Okay, so loveandcarrots.com. Our Instagram handle is also Love and Carrots, all written out the same way, at Love and Carrots. Yeah.
Great, thank you. And we'll make sure that those are in the show notes so everyone can find them. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was really nice talking to you.
It was great to talk to you.
You've been listening to Room by Room, produced by the Home Organization Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes like this from across 10 life management perspectives can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, and other podcasting apps available on your smart devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it so we can grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at ho.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Gabriella Yastra. Thanks for tuning in.